Hey, kids. You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles, and pancakes. The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Partycast. And fun thing, we have not been bought by Microsoft yet.
Not yet. We're hoping on those billions to come through any minute.
Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed. Tim's here. Purnell is here. Chris is here. Brooke is here. How is everybody doing?
Great.
Everybody doing all right.
Yeah. Doing all right. But now that you've mentioned the potential of getting bought by, you know, Microsoft, you know, you've got to start hyping up the Xbox more, Joe. You're not hyping it enough.
We are ready to sell out.
I am. Does this mean I have to use Edge?
No. No one has to use Edge. They don't. Okay. Microsoft doesn't use Edge. They just created out of an obligation.
Someone at Microsoft had to bing what Edge was.
It's one of those things. It's like the it's like that Fantastic Four movie from like the 80s or 90s.
Oh, God.
Where like they got Roger Corman to make like a movie for $10 just so they could maintain the rights, you know, like to have, you know, the Fantastic Four or something like that. It was like this weird like legal thing, and so they intentionally made this bad movie and then barely released it. And yeah, that's what Edge is. They needed a browser.
If we don't release a browser, we'll lose the right to make browsers.
Yeah, exactly. They needed to keep the patent up for whatever the hell that kind of thing is.
Oh, geez.
I think the funny part is, like, my job, like, and I don't know, it should not be the case, all things considered, but my job, despite the fact that we have Edge, everyone and their mom still is like, nah, I'm just going to use this unupdated Internet Explorer app, you know, browser, because that's smart and safe. But
I don't like to talk about IRL very much, but I do work customer service for a company that does software that does not work on Edge.
Wow.
Well, that sounds like you have a very relaxed environment, then. That's a good job to have.
Yeah, you know, until somebody comes in, like some weird Edge stand.
Yeah, but suddenly, then they'll put you guys on Edge, and then that's
well, actually, it uses less resources than Chrome.
There you go.
Oh, God, don't even get me started on Chrome's resource chugging ass. A pain in the butt, I swear. And it's despite that, I still use it. But it runs like six processes when you have, like, you know, only 20 tabs open. What's the deal with that? I don't understand. It should be able to handle more than that. Just saying.
But anyway, I like how we're talking about friggin' Chrome and
that's
Edge
how we do
and Internet Explorer. When there was legit huge news today, like,
but this is the SML browser cast.
Yeah, the browser cast. We normally cover news on the other episodes with Jacob and Aki, but we got to talk about this. Xbox bought Activision.
Well, Microsoft bought Activision.
Well, yeah. You know what I mean.
But it's important distinction.
Okay, Microsoft bought Activision Blizzard. Yeah.
But okay. Remember at large that Microsoft is a computer company that makes an operating system and you know, that shit.
And the thing is, like what you say, makes sense as being why it's important and to designate that have the distinction between those. Because honestly, I feel like a lot of people are already making claims like, oh, yeah, that means that all those franchises are not going to be on Xbox anymore. I'm like, on Sony anymore. Like, not necessarily. I mean, if anything, I almost feel like they'd be fools not to keep releasing games on that system, on the other systems. Because, I mean, if they're mainly pivoting their console as being an entertainment device, which includes games, mind you, then they're already getting their money in the ways they intend to. But by having their hand in the cookie jar for the games getting released on other consoles, they don't have to care how it plays out. If it just happens to sell like crazy on a Sony system, the money's still going in their pocket. So they really don't have to care, and their system's doing well enough.
See, people use that excuse that Microsoft would be missing out not releasing the games on PlayStation. Like, why wouldn't they release Halo on PlayStation? If they're missing out on all these sales, why wouldn't they release Forza on PlayStation?
I think the difference there, though, is that those were generally Xbox-exclusive franchises initially, And so at that point, it's like, why rock the boat? We don't have to change it. We already are. But
the hilarious part is that Crash Bandicoot, a one-time Sony mascot, is now owned by Microsoft.
Hey, I got at least three games of his on my Nintendo Switch. So
there you go.
Yeah.
See, I mean, that's the thing. Like, so it's like the idea is like, it's, I guess the best way to put it is like, for example, I think Persona is a good example of that. Because Persona is primarily is on Sony consoles. It's not a Sony exclusive game. It just happens to be on Sony a lot of times. And you'll hear people say, well, when it releases on the Switch, let me know and I'll go buy it. You know, and in which case, who knows? Maybe it will, maybe it won't. But
I mean, if Strikers is on the Switch.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, the idea is like when Strikers came out, a lot of people were saying, like, well, I want the real one. They called it, quote unquote, want the real Persona 5. I mean, in that sense, like, and don't get me wrong, I mean, obviously you already know, I own all of them. I don't give a damn. I have all the systems. I'm playing. I'm just speaking from the concept, like, the way I perceive it, which is that, you know, to release it, to go through, if they were the ones that owned that game, they definitely wouldn't have to care about that push between, like, only on this system, only on that system, because at the end of the day, they're getting their money. But there's no real need, per se, to lock it if it's already, you know, up to that. What the hell's killing me there? If it's already up to that point, a game that's on other systems, and they'll still get their cash. But if it happens to be the matter that, you know, the fuck is killing me? The point I'm making is that...
Are you dying, Purnell? Like, is there a crime going on?
There is a crime. Call the game wrecking police, because I am getting wrecked right now by an invisible enemy in this bullshit.
Call the Microsoft police.
Because I'm getting robbed. But like I said, like, it's just, if they do that, that's one thing. But I genuinely feel like a lot of the reason why you'd want to diversify yourself in that level, own those companies, and necessarily like get like a few extra sales on a console, when instead you can just get the money from the entire library, ownership group of that other system. Like, for example, right? What was it? Name one of the big games that got pulled because of this purchase. Just name one.
Well, nothing like, got pulled yet.
No. I'm saying that when you say
Diablo 4, I could see Diablo 4 being PC and Xbox only, unless there's already a contract in stone to release on PlayStation.
The thing is, I could see that, but I genuinely feel like if I was looking at it from a business perspective, like just pulling most income, not like, you know, general, like I like the system, so I want it to succeed better. I'm just saying money. Like, okay, you have this many people that already own Xbox, this many people already own PlayStations. And if you just say, we're going to make Diablo, or maybe Diablo, because Diablo's a big franchise. But if you were to say, we're going to make Diablo solely on Xbox now, and maybe PC.
Oh, definitely PC. Like,
how many people are you going to pull from PlayStation to buy an Xbox that doesn't already have an Xbox to get those sales versus just being like, you know, you don't have to get another console. You already have it. Just buy our game and we'll take your money. No problem.
People said the same thing about Bethesda, and they already confirmed that Elder Scrolls 6 is going to be Xbox only. Starfield is going to be Xbox only.
That'll be a trip. Now, in that case, it'll be interesting just to see how that works out monetarily. Because
I mean, I can definitely see Call of Duty staying multi-platform. There's no way they're going to pull Call of Duty from other platforms.
Yeah, they said that some things will still likely be multi-platform, and I would have to think that Call of Duty is number one with a bullet.
Yeah,
no pun intended for something that might remain multi-platform.
I could see Crash Bandicoot getting an exclusive just as a big fuck you towards Sony.
Well, I could still see Crash coming out on Switch.
Yeah. Like,
maybe it will, maybe it won't. But to your Diablo 4, I could see still coming out on PlayStation, because that is a huge game, and contracts regardless, they may just want a larger player base for it. Like, think about Overwatch 2. Like, after you sell Overwatch 2, the money in that game is selling loot boxes, and you want that in as many places as possible.
Yeah.
So I think, unlike... Yet
there's people who think Overwatch 2 is going to be dropped from PlayStation. I don't think so, but there's people who do.
That doesn't seem...
I mean, there's people that think all their games are going to get dropped from PlayStation.
The thing is that while Overwatch 1, the multiplayer, is going to integrate with Overwatch 2. Like, it's not going to change. So it's like, why would you, I don't know, whatever.
I think
Overwatch 2 is going to exist on PlayStation in some capacity just because of that. But, you know, what they're, you know, they're expanding their catalog here. For, by the way, $70 billion, which is like
yeah,
10 times what they spent on Bethesda.
I know that sounds like a lot of money, but I mean, is it really worth it to? Is it really worth it to anger the ghost of Teddy Roosevelt like that? He's gonna be trust busting from the grave.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, they're padding out, you know, Game Pass in a massive way, because they're like, oh, we are gonna put as much shit on Game Pass as we can. Like, actually, you know,
that you mentioned that would be the reason. That would be the hook. Like, if you were to say, hey, we're going to release on all the systems, but on Xbox, it's on Game Pass. So how many games would it take to just have an Xbox before you make your money back just getting all the games you were going to buy on PlayStation on your Game Pass, get them on your Game Pass account?
Yeah.
So that's a good point.
But it's just crazy because there is a massive, like, people are, you know, you think of the big things like Blizzard and the big Activision franchises, but there is so much that Activision owns from years of buying other companies.
Oh yeah.
That, like, you know, on the surface, you can't even think about what's like what IP are hiding around under there. Suddenly Microsoft might own and then maybe hand off to one of their other studios that they've bought up and be like, you know, make a game out of, I can't think of anything, but I know there's stuff in there. They're a huge company. It's like EA owns a billion things that you don't think about and they're just sitting on.
Meanwhile, I wish they'd buy Konami for that same reason. Like, you take those damn properties and put them to work.
You know,
someone should.
I think it'll be ultimately, well, you know, well, okay. One, massive media consolidation is bad in the long run. Let's throw that out there. That's just like these massive companies merging together, like Disney buying Marvel and Star Wars and Foxes.
Then Netflix is going to swoop in.
If there was any kind of like
antitrust
backbone in this country, like, this stuff would and should be getting shut down, but it won't be. But anyways, for the companies involved under the Activision umbrella that are getting bought up, like Blizzard, it's probably a good thing. It's been publicized how Activision was like, Blizzard, you need to put out more games more often for our fiscal bottom line. And that is just not how Blizzard works, or has ever worked. So maybe going back to a model where Blizzard can actually release things when they're darn good and ready will probably be good for Blizzard, which is, you know, aside from other things in the news, like, have had it pretty rocky as far as their games go over the past few years, as opposed to the preceding two decades, might give them some new life, even though that, like, everyone that worked there left. You know, you last year, Vicarious Visions, you know, put out that awesome Tony Hawk HD update, and then was immediately folded in to work on, you know, Blizzard
Call of Duty.
Yeah, just like, you know, just dissolved as a company and sent to do that. Well, maybe they might get to undissolved and get to ride again. And
that would be fantastic. They were a great studio.
Yeah, like, for a long time, they did great things, but, you know, they just didn't do great enough things for the kind of massive bottom lines that Activision as a company wanted. And, you know, Microsoft is much more down to put money into smaller games just so that they can be like, hey, this week on Game Pass, this is what we got, yo.
Yeah.
And then people be like, oh shit, I love Game Pass. I'm going to keep subscribing to Game Pass forever. Which was me today, because that new Drinkbox game came out on Game Pass.
Oh god, all the stuff coming out on Game Pass.
I don't remember what it's called. Yeah, something. Yeah, I think you said part of the name.
Nobody Saves the World.
Yeah, I immediately downloaded that. Like, Death's Door is hitting Game Pass on. We're just going to talk about Game Pass now on Thursday, which I just finished. And Death's Door is awesome.
Danganronpa just hit Game Pass. Yes, yeah. Danganronpa fucking launched on Xbox. Surprise.
No more excuses. I didn't realize that it was a Game Pass game when you sent me that link, but yeah, there you go. No more excuses. Play the fucking game.
Awesome. I have to.
So they have to.
Your time has come.
Building out this massive stable of companies to make sure that they have stuff to put on Game Pass for years to come. And, like, it's really going to it already hits, you know, when it's like, oh, Halo's out and it's on Game Pass, and Forza's out and it's on Game Pass. But like when fucking like big Bethesda RPGs are hitting Game Pass, when yeah. Is when the newest Call of Duty starts hitting Game Pass, are you fucking kidding me? Yeah,
like that is, it's first party Microsoft shit. Now. It's going to hit yeah. Game Pass day one.
And I can tell you right now, too, like, as I hit that, I mean, I had this epiphany, like, I guess about a year ago at this point, but I was telling myself, you know, after the Switch, I'm done with my thing where I buy lots of games for no fucking reason. and for the most part, it's honestly, it may seem weird, but so far it's been holding true. Like, I still have a ton of Switch games that you bet, but when it comes to, like, PS5 and when eventually Series X, I don't really have anything. Like, I don't buy much. And I intend to stick with that. So at that point in time,
Game Pass.
I know you are going to end up buying like things for though, Purnell, the next Switch.
I wonder about that. I mean, I question it. I mean, because if the next Switch ends up being like on that level, maybe, but I mean, for now, looking at the current plate, I'm like, I'm locked in. But with that said, having that
why mentality, am I a game on Xbox? It's on Game Pass.
and that's where I was going with that. It's like, if I'm in that mindset where like, okay, I'm done, I'm holding firm to this, but then I'm like, you know, but if now I don't care about the possession anymore, having a subscription service to just keep me in the gaming sphere, outside of reviews, obviously, but having this to keep me in the gaming sphere would be pretty sweet as a good concept. It's like, here's my entertainment budget for the whole fucking year. Like $120 for the entire year, and that's my entertainment for gaming.
You'll get more than you can handle.
That's for sure. I look at the Game Pass library right now, and I'm like, I can't play all these fucking games. I don't have the time for that. which is good. I want that variety. I want that diversity. So sign me up.
Jumping back to the Activision thing, my biggest question is going to be if Xbox and Microsoft are going to let the studios be free to do what they want, or if they're going to still keep every studio in some way working on Call of Duty.
Free as the devs.
I'm wondering, like, are they going to keep doing Call of Duty yearly? Like, why maybe not? Maybe you take a break every now and then, like, maybe those studios...
I mean, I don't play those games in my mindset. Monthly. Thinking like, if it's not unless the developers themselves are like, we're tired, please save us from this freaking yearly rehash. I feel like the end result will be like, hey, again, don't fix if it ain't broke. For some reason, they keep selling. Yeah. That's just money every year that we can bank on, like a yearly Madden.
I think John, it should Madden, be. Go ahead.
I was going to just say that John Madden passed away, and I highly doubt that name's going to change.
True. Oh,
yeah. I think that if they have a monthly Call of Duty, which is the great idea that I just had, they should call it Calendar of Duty.
Wow.
Thank goodness you got that joke out.
I know. I almost didn't.
12 months.
It's about Tim's response.
He's like, the elevator door is closing. Chris is like,
That was my briefcase into the
awesome
into the door.
Can be like the elevators at MAGFest where they didn't give a shit if you put your hand there. They would just shut anyways.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, oh, they were terrible this year.
You know what sucks? Being trapped in an elevator.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's what we could be talking about too. If you don't want to talk about, you know, more Activision, like how was the MAG? You were like the one of us that
it was
Tim went too, right?
No.
Virtually for a 2-hour panel, yes. But not physically, no. My plans were scuttled a few days ahead of time, but I zoomed in to assist with Name That Tune.
How did that go, by the way?
Zerum zoomed in too, so that means that you were both zoomed in.
No,
Zerum,
he was there.
Zerum literally zoomed in. He drove in specifically just for panels.
Yeah, and then left.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's dedicated. But he only lives across the road, but still, a little bit of dedication. In that case, it goes back to what we were saying before. I guess Joe was the only physical attendee, so how was it?
It was, as a MAGFest, it was really, really good because it was only about 12,000 people as opposed to 25,000 people.
It was like a MAGFest 8.5.2.
It was like MAG 11. 11, 12. It felt like an older MAGFest. It felt really good. It's just, it was lonely because nobody went. No one I knew went. There were only like 6 people I knew there. So I spent a lot of downtime in the hotel room just like watching stand up on Netflix.
I have, besides you, I had one other friend that went, and she kept sending me pictures of empty halls and stairways.
Oh, gosh.
Weird. Yeah, I got a few empty hallway pictures just that were usually, but you know, that's the way it was at the early mags of the Gaylord, is like, that is a huge space. So it's like, when you don't have 20,000 people in there, there's actually quite a lot of room.
Except on the elevators.
Yeah.
Except on the elevators, where you're always fucked.
Yeah.
Were they still, actually, I do need to ask this because I was wondering this myself. Were they, given the fact that everybody was wearing masks stuff, hopefully, were they still doing the Colossus roar and shit?
Yes, they did the fucking roar.
God damn it.
Yeah.
I called that. I admittedly called that, but still, I wanted to be wrong.
It wasn't bad this year. Like, it obviously, because there weren't as many people, but they still did the fucking roar. Everyone is doing it wrong. People online are calling it a Goku roar now. Like, what
I
the
think that was Photoshop. I don't think that was
People don't know what the fuck the origins are anymore. It's just sad. Now it's just
people think MAGFest started like 7 years ago. So
yeah.
Like, they don't think MAGFest existed before the Gaylord.
And that's what our panel was all about, just talking about the early days, the single digit days.
Yeah, I could
appreciate. Do you have a rocking chair for that panel?
I wish. That would have been great.
Hello, everybody.
We didn't even get to record it because Brendan couldn't do MAGFest this year. He was the one who was going to bring the laptop and record everything. And like, we were lucky Zerum was there to play Norg's intro off his phone, which went over pretty well. Everyone seemed to get a kick out of the, since you're sequestered around 20,000 other people, go ahead, lick some fucking doorknobs. You're going home with a gift and it's not a toaster.
You can't go wrong with Norg.
Yeah.
And I could definitely say, like, the idea, I mean, like, the idea of getting a panel at MAGFest, I feel like whether it's a niche panel or a big boomer panel, like, not boomer as in the age group, but it's a big win in that sense, because I feel like the audience is there for it. Like, I feel like even if you have this panel where it's just like, people will look at the book and go, what the hell is this? I got some time to tell me to go check it out. So all of a sudden, now you have this chance to flourish, where if you were like at a smaller convention, people would be like, we don't have time for this, we're doing other shit. So I feel like it's a big get to be at that show and be able to put something on. So that still was awesome.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a good time. I wish more friends were there. That's my only disappointment, is that I didn't see enough people because nobody went.
I mean, yeah. I did want to go this year. Just I couldn't in good conscience get myself to do it after, you know, I was sick at that moment, my damn self. So
no.
Like, no do you. But if it happens again next year and I'm not dying a part two, I will totally show up and I will be as loud as I can get, because I like being loud. Loud is fun sometimes.
It is fun. We got to meet you there for the 20th anniversary. Isn't that next year?
Yeah, next year's MAG 20.
Yeah. I love to be all of that.
If anything, that would be a really big reason to have the damn panel, try to get the panel again. Because it's like, hey, and I mean, I still think about this myself. I'm like, hey, I'm in, like, I have to tell people, like, I'm in the program book. That's why I can say it. I'm right there. And then people are like, well, why weren't you, if you were in the program book, why weren't you in the photo for Teardown? Because I was tearing down, motherfucker. I was doing my job. I'm sorry I wasn't posing with everybody. But like, yeah, like I like the idea of going for those anniversary shows, because I do, like, I think it's interesting, like, when we talk about the whole like MAG memories thing and all, like, Joe was like, Pernell, you should be on this panel. And I'm like, sure, I will. But the reality of it is I was at one and two and I stopped for 8 years. So I feel like I'll be talking about like that early stuff and then be like, OK. And then I left. So, Joe, what did I miss? But like,
well, yeah, if you were there, you were going to be like the podcast co-host, because you weren't technically a lumberjack. You're a woodsman because you were at the first one.
But your first and second. I like the idea of the woodsman. Like, I was there for the first year, and the second year, and after the second year, I was like, I can't do this anymore. I'm out. Leave.
Can't deal with you people.
And walked out. Can't do this anymore. And I left until like I was at a party in Baltimore, and like maybe like at around the time of MAG 8 or so. And just hanging out with some random people, and off a whim, somebody, I think it was Adam, just referenced MAGFest. And I was like, what about MAGFest? And they were like, oh, yeah, you know about Mac? He starts going off. I was like, oh, no, I know about Mac. I just thought it died years ago. And then it went down the rabbit hole. He's like, what do you mean died? That's bullshit. I was like, I was there. I helped start it. What are you talking about? And that opened up a lot of canned worms. And we got to talk. And he was like, oh, I'm running the game room now. I'm like, that's awesome. I ran the game room. Let's talk shop. And I wanted to learn all the stuff he was doing and where he was getting all this stuff from to build it out and all. I got into the logistics of it. It was a lot of fun. And that's when I got back and I was like, I want to see Mac Festival. What am I doing? But like, and the thing about it is like, it's funny when you think about it, like a lot of, you'll hear some people say it's not like it used to be. You'll hear some people say it's still great. You'll hear some people say it's a whole hot bunch of shit. But at the end of the day,
kind of all of those are true in their own way.
They really are. But at the end of the day, there's something nice to be said about the fact that regardless of how a person personally feels about the show itself exists in a way that it gives game folks a nice, you know, culturally effective way to connect with each other.
The fuck was that? Did someone fall?
Just somebody dropping their phone. No big deal. Somebody trying to open a beer and instead dropping everything they're holding. Nice. No problem.
What that? Never know.
But yeah, like it's just something nice about the fact that it exists in that space. And it's like a high level cultural thing. It's not just like niche background thing. When it happens, NBC, ABC, all those mega regular news stations are there like MacFest is happening. Like back in the day, nobody gave a shit about MacFest. It was like a couple nerds went and that's cool. But now you got what is like MacFest and PAX and Comic Con. Yeah. It's like, yeah, we had to beg people to go. Now it's like people, you can't keep people from wanting to go. So it's like, man,
literally.
So now, like I said, it's like PAX, MAG, and Comic-Con. Like, they're the big three that involve gaming in any scope, and Comic-Con is loosely attached. So
I wouldn't even put MAGFest near the level of those other two.
I don't know. Like, I can't remember how, like, I remember admittedly, it was the last time I went to PAX. It was PAX East. And that was pulling numbers similar to what MAGFest is pulling. It was like 20-something thousand
people. I thought they had a lot more than that.
Yeah, they've
they might be now. Yeah. They might be now. Like, back when I was going, they were like 20-something thousand. Because I think I went to, like, the first and second PAX East, and then I stopped because it was just way too crowded for that space. You couldn't do anything. I think I spent my second PAX East just entering a Miss Explosion Man tournament and trying to beat everybody there because we became obsessed with beating each other's times. It was like this group of eight people who beat everybody else, and everyone was like, we can't touch those times. Like, okay, we got to beat each other out, but we're friends now. So we were collectively working together to teach each other how to beat our other scores. And then the person who could do the best, knowing everyone else's techniques, was the king. And that was awesome as shit. Just walking through the board, like scratching people's names off and watching them scream at you. Good feeling. It doesn't happen very often.
Explosion Man is a game that needs to come back.
You goddamn right it does. Explosion Man is a jam. And it's some of the best co-op you will ever see in your life, without question. Like, people like to talk about, you know, FPSs and all that, and like the Overwatch games. And no. Something about Explosion Man and the idea of having to be two people who can only run, jump, and explode, which I guess is technically jumping. That's how you jump.
That's the jumping.
It's jumping in different directions.
But like the way they design the puzzles with co-op is that you have to explode into each other to bounce off in different directions or to launch the other player. And they start having sections where you have to do it multiple times in succession while water's chasing you and crap. And there's this level of perfection that is the required of the players. And when you hit that peak and also get all the cakes and shoes, there's nothing like it. There's literally nothing like it that I've experienced in co-op game. Like, there's just like this zen where it's like, we did it. And we didn't even have to talk. We were just like, we knew when to do things. You just mentally were attached to each other. Great. So
I didn't realize Miss Explosion Man was on the Switch.
Yep.
That's pretty cool.
Yep.
And if someone's listening to this and they've never played Miss Explosion Man, and that's the system they have the quickest access to, buy it and get a friend. And enjoy yourself, hate each other, and then love each other.
Did we maybe just like really smoothly segue into reviewing games?
I don't know. Did we?
That's up to you, Joe.
Okay, yeah. Should we do reviews? Let's do this shit. Been a half hour. Let's get to the actual meat of the show.
So, before we launch into reviews, I had some personal news I wanted to share. Something that happened in my life with my partner and I over my winter break. Yennefer and I are back together. at long last, Jennifer Vingerberg. Sweet. And I, on again, Jennifer off again. Just want to let everybody know, my girl and I are back together.
I did install that game again. Together.
I need some context here.
Congratulations.
Give me the Yennefer.
Oh, dude, are you not a Witcher fan? I started watching Witcher the show, which I never wanted to watch because I put hundreds of hours into Witcher 3, and I'm really close to it. I've read a bunch of the literature, too. Finally started watching Witcher Season 1, and it's blowing my mind. It's so good, it made me want to restart Witcher 3 again. So that was a big chunk of my break.
I have a horrible Witcher history in that I have Witcher 2, I have Witcher 3, and I have both physical Witcher card games. And I've done none of it because I keep being daunted by the sheer volume of content. So I'm like, time to start. Don't start, because I don't know if I'll be able to stick with 100 hours of content.
Like, I think the general consensus is you could skip the first game. The second one is worth playing. Three is really the best, though.
I would second that. I would say if you want to start with three, so you're playing with the newest, shiniest version, that's cool. Like, honestly, some people may give you crap for, like, not starting a really daunting journey there as far as, like, narrative video game storytelling goes. But, you know, you've always got that waiting for you. It's a huge world. In 2015, when I was originally playing you with it, I think the world is, what, twice as big as Skyrim. Like, if you want to play that kind of game, definitely get at me if you want to try it. And if you want more reasons to try it, like, hit me up on Facebook Messenger anytime. I will talk about Witcher endlessly. I should actually cut this part off now before I go too far. But if anybody wants to nerd out, get at me privately. I can talk about
Witcher. Brooke, I'm about I to might start get to at you. Okay, here, Prudhoe, here's the 411. See, yes. You're going to go to the town of Skillet. Don't
get us started.
You were right, Tim. We had that window, and it's just gone now. It vanished.
I actually Brooke changed it away this time.
Yeah.
I had some personal views. She's allowed. With the team,
Yeah. Hey, I'm not knocking it. If anything, I support more tangent creators in the show.
Well, Pernell, if you're ever, like, about to start it, please hit me up, dude. If you ever start it, you gotta hit me up. Tell me what happened. Tell me what girl you picked. I picked the other one, but you don't have to. You got your choice.
Well, I don't know. Now I feel a lot of pressure. I mean, maybe Yennefer is the one. I don't know.
Yennefer can do okay without
that. She'll be fine without you, but she'll let you know in a way that may or may not hurt you. And that's all I'm going to say.
Does it involve a blade in my Achilles?
Depends on how you answer her questions. That's all I'm going to drop right now. She's a cool mistress. Some of us love
that. All right, enough Witcher talk. We got to get to reviews. First game to talk about tonight is called Eterna Noctis, developed and published by Eternum Game Studios, released December 15th on Xbox Series X and S, PS5, and PC for $29.99. Eterna Noctis is an epic non-linear action platforming adventure. Its 16 areas full of challenge and quests will allow you to explore the vast universe of Eterna, taking the role of King of Darkness in his mission to regain his lost abilities. In this adventure, everything isn't as it seems. The story is hiding something more profound and unexpected that you as the player will find out. Pernell, that sounds ominous. What's going on with this one?
So, fun fact about this game. I actually heard about this game like a little bit before you offered the code, and I think this is worth mentioning because when I get into the review, it's going to be interesting in that when I saw the pictures of it and stuff, I was initially like, I don't care about it. It doesn't look very engaging to me. It just didn't have the look, as I'll call it. It didn't click for me. But when you offer the code, I was like, well, then I can try it. And I've come to learn over the years that sometimes it's all about seeing the game in motion and experiencing the game to know if the screenshots did it justice. And what I can say is that they did not do it justice, because I've actually enjoyed this game for what I've been playing of it. It's a good time. Some might call it a Metroidvania type game, and I guess you could kind of go with that, though you don't get the individual equipment with different stats that you would see in a lot of those games. But the idea is that you have basically two entities, both a entity of light and an entity of dark, who existed since almost the dawn of this universe's existence. And through their desire for more power, the creator of the universe has condemned them to a constant struggle of back and forth battling. So it maintains the world's balance by them constantly fighting to dethrone the other. And then when the other one is dethroned and therefore, quote unquote, killed, they get sent back to what you could call the starting point, and they have to get their power back to fight the person again, wash, rinse, repeat for all eternity. And there's an whole religion built around it and everything. But you play the role as the king of the king of darkness, going on his yet another routine run to get his power back. And you're seeing, like, you're noticing, like, the various changes in the world that he's starting to finally catch on to. Like, what's going on? This doesn't seem right. This wasn't like it was before last time I was here. And you're putting things together as you progress. But the way you're going through that is through a lot of platforming, a lot of skill requirements, and a lot of combat. And something about this that shines compared to a lot of other games like this is that they don't pull punches on the platforming aspects of the game. This game is tough, platforming-wise. It's very tough. Lots of spikes, a lot of timing puzzles and traversals. And they're not one-hit kills, but they are designed in a way so that, you know, sometimes you'll play a platformer where there might be a bunch of, you know, perilous spikes in the way, and you can land on something or get hit by something. It's like, okay, I'll bunch you back. But it's basically you get stunned, but you're not dead. And this game, they balance it out in an interesting way. It doesn't kill you, but if you have health and you take the hit, it will send you back a little bit so you can try it again. But it doesn't let you just, like, kind of tank a hit just to plow through a puzzle section with, like, spikes and crap. So you got to work for it. But if you do ultimately lose all of your health, they get you back to kick checkpoints, kind of like how Dark Souls would do it. And your soul is languishing in the area where you died. So if you can get back there, you'll get your experience points that you've been hoarding. And otherwise, you'll lose it if you die. So if you can't do it, you can also work back to the home base and just pay a guy money to give it back to you, which is kind of nice if you die in a really tough section. So now I talked about just the platform. What about the actual freaking gameplay? What's the combat like? So initially, start the game out with just a basic sword attack. You can wish, swing it, attack, and do damage. But as you progress through the game, you'll get a few additional, like, dark weapons that kind of function in special ways. Like, to give you an example, you get an axe at one point in the game, and you would think that that would mean that now you can swing an axe, like a sub-weapon. But really what that is that unlocks your charge attack, so you can hold down the button and then unleash it to do a super strike, which drains blood to do, so you can't just spam it. Now, you hear that and you go, what the hell is blood? You're just jumping all over the place, Perno, you asshole. I'm like, oh, you want to, yeah. Blood is a currency that you get when you kill enemies in the game. And it has two functions. One, the aforementioned one, like I said, where you can use it to use attacks, like charged attacks. But the other function for it is that there's a container that holds the blood. And if you can fill that container up, you can use that charge to give yourself one hit point back. So it gives you an excuse to kind of like rotate through your blood. Don't just like hoard the entire container of it. It's like just for special attacks. You're like, okay, well, I've maxed it out. I may as well heal myself. And the next bit of blood can be my next special attack hit. So that's a good thing. And there's also like chalices you can get. Like you can like have like one item carry where you can use like a health potion for another health point as well. And then you can recharge it by either buying it from a merchant or finding it as like an item dropper from a chest. So it ended up resulting in this like nice juggle effect where you're kind of balancing out, should I heal myself with this one or should I heal myself with that one? Because I don't know where I'm going to get the other, which one I'm going to get back first. And sometimes you'll be fighting enemy groups that will beat the tar out of you because not so much in the form of the invincibility frames either when you get hit. But I really have been enjoying the exploration in this game, finding merchants and spending my currency to get new upgrades such as like marker points for the main map, which are used to kind of just like tick zones where you might want to come back and check out later, because you're going to come across a lot of that kind of stuff. Or like additional potions that allow you to travel back to the save point willy nilly if you need to. And like a few other things that you can buy. Nothing game breaking or game changing, but enough to be kind of like, hey, I got some use for this money and I'm not going to feel sad about it. Cause the majority of the stuff you really want is acquired through exploration. The actual world traversal stuff, and I'm almost done, and I'm just like, God damn it, for now.
I didn't say anything. I was going to say it's a really pretty game. I like the visuals.
I'll say that. Then yeah, I agree. Like, when I saw the game in motion and listened to the game, all my thoughts about it that I initially thought about visually were just erased, because this game looks very nice. Movement and animation is great. And the music is a it's a melancholy in a great way. Like, I like the music in this. It does a great job of carrying the vibe of like walking through like these dark environments, dealing with like these crypts and burning locations and the like. It's good music. Great music for this game. And one thing that's weird about the map that I haven't really seen done in a game for in probably ever is the big map you get when you're exploring the world. When you go to locations, you're running around. If you bring up the mini map, the area around you lights up, but the places you've gone to, but you're not near, are dark. So like you can see like, these like really faint silhouettes of like, what the heck's going on with this place in the map? I can't tell where it looks like I've been there, but I can't see it. And for a while, I was ready to say, this is a pretty shitty mini-map system. I can't even see anything. This is stupid. But that was intentional because eventually you'll come across a merchant that pops up in different places in the world. And when you meet him, you can buy the map. Once you purchase the map, now everything's lit up in a way where you can actually see it if you're not near it on the map. So it's kind of cool and incentivized to say you can't just like run around and chart the map until you actually acquire the map. Once you do that, then you can chart it like normal, like walking around and finding new zones and all that. There's a fair bit of iconography on the games. You can see where you went and stuff like that. It's a good time. In fact, I feel like there's only one big complaint that I kind of have about the game.
What's that?
So when you get new abilities and items and the like. Oh, I forgot to mention skill points, but I'll get to that after I talk about my complaint. So when you get new items and abilities and all that, there's a screen called Collection that shows you icons of everything you've acquired. But you can't select anything there to see what it does to kind of just refresh yourself. And like, let's say, for example, you put the game down, you come back, and you want to just kind of recall, what items did I have last? Or what skills do I have? You see all these icons, but you can't look at what they do or what they give you. It's just, you've got the circle with the bat in it. Ooh! Like, no, I want to know what the circle with the bat freaking did for me. What is it good for? But if they can put something in there where you can actually look through that, or even better, they come on the Twitter and be like, "Perna, you goober, push this button and you can see it." I'm like, "Oh, that's great, guys." But that's my main complaint about the game. But the last two features I want to mention before I forget them is there are two other things that you can use to get better in the game aside from just finding the abilities and all that, or opening the gates to get to the abilities. And those are gems and skill points. Gems are items that you can find across the map as you're exploring in different places. The gems give you special abilities or buffs such as like, you know, crit increased damage or health potion acquisition or increased health potion acquisition. You can equip them once you unlock gem slots. They consider just being imbued into your armor. And whenever you go to like one of the like save waypoints, you're allowed to like actually switch them in and out of the armor. And the other thing, skill points, is the thing you actually get when you level up your character. Every time you level up, you can upgrade your, you know, a few base stat items, which, as you know me, I suck at doing that, so my stats are really low. And you can also spend the skill points themselves to get a few, like, perks, such as movement speed increases or, you know, hasten to heal activations, attack speed increases, stuff like that. And if you
really got to learn to just use your goddamn skill points.
It's a bad habit, man. I don't understand.
It's relatable.
It's just a problem for me. I need a
They're doctor. There to use it. When in doubt, throw everything in strength. That's what I do. Because then you hit harder. And
the worst part is you can actually use the throne room to actually respect yourself. At least the skill points, anyway. You can respect your skill points whenever you want, as long as you're at a waypoint. So it's like, why aren't you spending your shit? I'm like, I don't feel like it. But for normal people, that is a good thing to have access to. You can experiment and decide what build works best for you, and that's kind of nifty. So, in the end, I feel like this game is, honestly, a good time. I like running around this world, I like experiencing it, and it's a large place to explore, too. You're going to spend a fair bit of time in this game.
Well, it's $30. What are your thoughts?
I think it's a solid buy it. The only thing I would say that make you maybe not want to buy it is if you just can't handle a challenge. Like, I think they're generous with how they respawn you and stuff like that, but you're still going to work through some of the more interesting platforming sections, so just be prepared to put some effort in, but it's worth your time. It's a great time. A great game.
All right, next game to talk about is RP Golf Legends, developed by Arctic Net, published by Kemco, releasing January 20th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and Steam for $29.99. An evil force has sealed all the golf holes in the world, join forces with the spirit of a golf club, and embark on a fantastic action golfing adventure to save golf in the world. Ride a ship, an airship, and sometimes even golf carts to travel around a unique world where monsters and golf coexist. Chris, tell us about your time with RP Golf Legends.
In a world where creatures and golf coexist. That's actually their tagline. Awesome. I had to do it. Okay, so RP Golf. Not to be confused with RPG Golf.
RPG Golf.
That's golf with rocket launchers. It's fun, but it's not what we're talking about today.
So what are we talking about today?
So this is an action RPG golf hybrid, which may sound familiar to you. And yes, there is already one, but this is another one. And this is, again, the one that we're talking about. You play as Aaron, who is the protagonist of the last RP golf game, which I mistakenly started playing, thinking I was playing the game that I'm reviewing. So I got quite far in it until I realized, oh, I've played this before. There's that maze. I've actually reviewed this before. So I loaded up the second game. I was like, oh, there it is.
Because
Joe was also playing it, and he confused me because he was like, I played like half an hour of the arcade game in the house. I was like, what arcade game in what house? Anyway. So, yeah.
Like the very first house that you're in, like the house, your house.
If you're in the right game. If you're in the wrong game, it's a different house. Anyway. So, yeah, it's a top-down running around and swinging a golf club either at golf balls or at golf enemies. And they kind of blend the two together. It's adventure, moving from screen to screen and hole to hole. Basically, what you do is there, like the thing said, there's like sealed off golf courses. Each hole is sealed off by a crystal. And you need to bring up the energy of your ghost of a golf club buddy, who will then unlock that hole, and then you get to play the hole. And so playing the hole, you have to at least get a par in order to pass it. This is no bogeys allowed in this game. And
get good.
Yeah, get good. And, you know, they're very, like real golf, I assume. Not, you know, I don't play real golf, but it has everything from like, you know, a par three, par five, and you know, on and on. And
I ran into a par six, which caught me off guard. I don't think I've ever seen a par six in a game before. So the first par six I ran into, I was like, "Huh, this is going to be a long hole."
I feel like I did once in Jack Nicklaus's greatest 18 holes of major championship golf on the NES. By the way, you have to say the full title if you're going to refer to Jack Nicklaus's greatest 18 holes of major championship golf. Anyways, I think it had a par six. But anyways, back to this golf video game. So yeah, if you get a par, then you pass, and it basically does a little spinner where you can spin for more energy, or a life heal, or a kind of a magic heal. Which is how you use your special moves and later magic. And but you can also raise your energy by defeating enemies, and you know, and then also if you get a birdie or better, which of course a birdie is, if you aren't familiar with the game of golf, then I'm sorry, but par means you hit it in the amount of strokes that they want you to. So if it's a par three and you get the ball in the hole in three shots, that's par. But if you get there in two shots, that's a birdie. And I think, well, a hole in one would be a hole in one, but yeah, like if it's two under par, I think it's like an eagle or something. Yep. I definitely eagle didn't get an eagle. Albatross.
Yep, and then yeah, albatross. Yeah,
thank you. So yeah, if you get a birdie or better, then you get more spinners, and the second spinner actually will award you a guaranteed money prize that's just, you know, between like a small amount and a very large amount. And with that money, that is how you go and buy more items to get, you know, better, just better everything. Eventually you buy better golf clubs. You also have to buy your golf balls. So don't go thinking you're just going to be playing golf all day for free. If you run out of golf balls, you either got to like get good at the golf, or you got to start whacking some imps. or bears.
Or, oh, the friggin' bears in this game.
There are bears. But, you know, fortunately, as opposed to the last game, you actually have... I'm not going to go too much into the last game, because this game's quite different. But as opposed to, and we talked about this in that interview, is that you can now block enemy attacks, which is really nice. You don't just run away like 50 yards away every time an enemy's about to try and get at you. And having said, there's a nice plethora of enemies here. A lot of the ones from the previous game, and like I said, there's bears and there's, you know, snacks and there's imps and there's, you know, giant bosses and stuff, which is really cool. And like I said, the adventure part also earns you money and energy for playing more golf. So it's like, if you want to lean on one more than the other, you're totally free to do so. The other thing that you can do is 1,000,001 side quests.
There are a lot of side quests in this game.
This game really is unapologetic about layering on the side quests. They're like, go get me 5 of this. Just, you know, whatever. Just do it. Go kill all these crabs. I was like, no, they don't fight back. But I had to go.
I have to go on a crab murdering spree just for the Xbox achievements.
I got that too, actually. with a freaking golf club is terrible. Mayhem. Anyways, so yeah, it's basically, it's either Zelda or golf, depending on, you know, which one you want to do more. I found myself more drawn to the golf game. It's really tight. I really quite like it. Typically with golf, you have like, several, like, you know, you have to aim, you know, your trajectory, and then you have to like do 2 different timed power-up systems. And this game's like that. It's a little more standard golf game than the last game. The last game only had 1 parameter that you just, you know, just power. But this one, you know, you have to aim, and of course there's wind that you have to take into effect. If there's like 2 mile an hour winds blowing to the left, your golf ball is going to go careening to the left, so make sure to compensate. And the cool thing about this game, and I actually like this, not all golf games do this, it doesn't automatically point you in the best direction. Most golf games do, so they're like, well, okay, so the wind's going this way, but instead of making you think about it, we're just going to point you automatically in the best direction and just hit it as hard as you can. But this game's like, no, you got to actually figure this out, please.
Yeah, points and, you like line of sight directly towards the hole, and you got to figure out where you want to aim and go.
Go ahead.
No, you go.
Oh, I was just going to say, and there's like different strategies, because this is a magical golf game. You can have magical golf balls that do things like never sink in water, or, you know, you never lose this ball, or this one like does this or that, you know, you like, and you can craft them too, because there's a crafting system in this game, because of course there is. Anyway, go ahead with what you were saying.
I enjoyed the different colored golf balls actually come into play in some of the dungeons. And some of the quests that you have to do require different colored balls to use.
Drop it, bitch!
Holy shit, root beer dropping 2,022 biddies. Holy shit, thank you very much.
Thanks, root beer.
Thank you.
Wow, that caught me off guard. That's a lot of bits. Thank you so much, root beer. I really appreciate that. That is
stunned.
I have a new goal on the stream, the little bar at the bottom. It's a new office chair for my fat ass. So
I saw that. You need that.
That is a good start to the goal. Thank you very much.
Manifesting this for you.
And the golf. My biggest gripe with this game is I wish there were more ways to gain health back. Like, you have to use potions, which you can use a potion, and then you have to wait 30 seconds before you can use another one. So if you have a bunch of single-use, one-heart potions, you got to wait before you could get your 4 health back.
Yeah, no, it's true. That, and I kind of miss the experience point system. Yeah. I know that they wanted to tighten it up a little bit, but I was like... kind of like that if you whack enough bears and imps that, you know, you can do it more efficiently next time. And that also translated to better golf swings. Like, I actually quite like that system, but, hey, you know, they're still doing it. And this might appeal to people who don't like grinding, because obviously there's no real grinding in this game. If you want money, do side quests or be good at golf.
No.
Or else, you know, get used to grinding.
Well, it's $30. What are your thoughts on it?
$30, I mean, that's a pretty big ask, but that's okay. I think this is worth it. Especially, I think they said they were going to come out with a physical version, and I definitely I'm going to try and pick that up for myself because I didn't, you know, since I didn't get this on Switch, I'm going to try and get it on Switch. Yeah. It seems like it's a perfect game for Switch. So, but yeah, no, I'm quite taken by this one, and it's very fun. And I don't think there's a giant maze of bush. So that's nice.
Phrasing. Are we doing phrasing on here?
You are now. Phrasing.
I mean, either way you want to translate it, it's still true. That it's not there.
SML After Dark. Next game to talk about is SNK versus Capcom Card Fighters Clash, developed and published by SNK, released January 12th on the Switch for $7.99. Characters from SNK and Capcom clash in this epic card fighting game, introducing SNK versus Capcom Card Fighters Clash, a white hot card fighting game for the Neo Geo Pocket Color, originally released in 1999. Back then, SNK versus Capcom Card Fighters Clash was sold as two separate games. The SNK Card Fighters version and the Capcom Card Fighters version, but now both have been combined into one game. There's nothing stopping you from collecting all the cards. Tim, I'm guessing the only thing stopping you is time?
Yeah, that's accurate. Yeah. Given infinity, I would have collected all of the cards.
Gotta catch them all.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, so like just kind of at the beginning, and I think you still could have caught them all in the old version. Not really. Sure, for sure, because I didn't have a Neo Geo Pocket, and I didn't play it back then.
I did!
But yeah, right at the top of the game, they ask you, you pick SNK or Capcom, and that gives you kind of your starting deck, whether it is a bunch of Capcom characters or a bunch of SNK characters. So yeah, what you have here, this is a Neo Geo Pocket release on the Switch, in the grand tradition of... they did SNK versus Capcom. That was the one they did standalone, the other one. And then they have like the collection. And now this one is out on its lonesome as well. So because of Inscription last year, I've heard a lot of people buzzing about the old Pokemon trading card Game Boy Color game for no reason whatsoever as it relates to Inscription. But yeah, this is kind of in that vein. Think put your mind back to the year 1999 and the Game Boy Color and very simple 8-bit style graphics.
You're not gonna believe this. I just got a Game Boy Color today.
I was gonna be the one to bring it up. I was gonna be like, Chris just got a purple Game Boy Color today. Nice. Oh my goodness.
I still have my...
Thank you.
Oh, it's modded?
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's got the bright screen.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I have a teal Game Boy Color. It is not modded. I must play it under a light.
nice. Worm light.
Yeah. get out the worm light. Anyways, I just have to wait till the end of this year for my analog pocket to show up. I think it's the end of this year. Might be next year, but I think it's the end of this year. Anyways, Neo Geo Color Games, SNK, Card Fighters Clash, SBC, Card Fighters Clash.
What's the point of the game? You play cards.
Yeah, no, it is a card game RPG. So you have your deck of cards. You are going to wander around town to different locations, like different basically arcades or miniature golf places, to find other young children to play this card game against. And as you beat them, you will earn respect and medals. And once you earn 5 medals from each of the locations, then you move on. But every person you beat at this card game, you gain more cards that you can then swap into your deck. A deck is 50 cards. Most of the cards in your deck are going to be character cards, which are going to be based upon characters from various SNK or Capcom franchises, not exclusive to fighting games, because there is, Mega Man and Metal Slug stuff in there, and Captain Commando, also things that appear in fighting games, but, other things are involved. So you have your character cards, and then you have action cards, which will take a certain amount of SP points, which will accrue throughout the game, mainly from depending on what character cards you play. So you get into the game, and I think, I haven't played Yu-Gi-Oh! In like 20 years, but I feel like this kind of reminds me of that a little bit.
Oh, have I got some news for you, Tim. There's a brand new Yu-Gi-Oh! Game that just came out tonight.
Really?
Yeah, free to play.
Thank God.
Yeah.
I watched sort of. There was a whatever. I'm not going on another tangent right now. but so you on your turn, you can play down one character card onto the field. That character cannot attack when it is played. But yeah, and you'll have three slots to play down a character. So you put down your character. Characters have a certain amount of they have a score on them, which acts as both their attack and their health. So when, you know, by the time both players have played a couple characters and you can tell your characters to attack, and when you attack, if all were just going to go straight forward, you would do, you know, whatever damage that character has on the card to your opponent's, health. But, inevitably your opponent is going to counter your attack with one of their cards that's on the field, and then those cards will fight, and whoever has the bigger number may kill the other or just take damage and stop the attack from going through to the owner's main health points. So that's like the basic gist, is you put cards down and then you make them fight with one another, and eventually you know through tactics and strategy you will make it so that you are attacking your opponent when characters cannot counter you and do enough damage to them so that they die over, you know, the course of the game. But, you know, as you're playing cards down, some of them will give you SP points, and those SP points you can use to take action cards. And actually there's some cards that have abilities that take a certain amount of action points to use. Other characters have abilities that will just activate when you play them down on the field. Like Dalsim has a ability where he will look at the next card. He will pull a card from your deck, and you can either put it on the top or the bottom. Like if you want to draw it next turn, you put it on the top. If you don't want to see it for a while, you throw it on the bottom and hope for the best. you know, just something like that.
Yeah.
Ken has a like passive ability where he usually, after a character attacks, they're frozen and you can't use them to defend. But Ken is the fiery Ken Masters, is always ready to attack or defend. He does not go into a freeze mode. So yeah, it's a good back and forth. There's good strategy involved in figuring out, like, because sometimes you won't want to defend an attack and you just want to, you know, take the attack on your life points to set up something else later on. There's a lot of strategy for when you want to use your SP points. There's also a system where certain characters can back up other characters and basically add their attack points to the one you have on the field. So example, you know, for example, if you have Ryu down, I actually don't know if this is one in the game, but well, actually no, here's one I know. It's like if Mega Man is down, you can use Proto Man to back up Mega Man and add Proto Man's attack points to Mega Man's, thus making a stronger character.
Oh, that's cool.
It is cool. And that is where a lot of the strategy for actually building your deck comes from. Because early on, like the first deck they hand you, it has a bunch of cards in it, but they don't really synergize with each other. Like some of them, like a few of them do. But what you want to try to do is build decks with characters that will be able to back each other up. So that's what you want to look out for when you're, you know, collecting cards and then slotting them into a deck. It is, you know, again, a game that is now 23 years old. And that's not going to fool you, but that's, you know, not the point here. It has a reasonable tutorial for kind of getting you the basics of the game. Of course, the manual is available to peruse. You know, it's a lot of information, like any card game. Like there's just kind of a lot of nuance to it. It's definitely like, I found it a little bit clunky, like customizing your deck. Because you'd have to go into your deck and say you have three of a particular card, like you have to select the card and then you have to reduce, like one by one, reduce the amount of that card you have in your deck by like down to two, down to one, down to zero. And it's just kind of like, that's a weird way to do it rather than just kind of selecting the card and being like, I don't know, there's ways that could go faster. But, you know, it's a 23-year-old game. What are you going to do? The bottom line, though, is it's still fun. I think the card battles, I mean, they can take some time just kind of going back and forth with all the animations. They're not speedy. They're not meant to be. I feel like that almost everyone I was in took like 15, 20 minutes at least to get through. But, you know, I'm engaged the whole time. I did not find it like, oh my God, just get this battle over with. Like, it's, you know, you still have to stay on your toes and think and make decisions. The art, as it is for like pretty much any Neo Geo pocket game I've seen, you know, developed Bass and K, like the art is really good. The card art, like the way the characters look on the cards, I think is really cool. Everything else, you know, is just pretty clear to understand what's going on the screen. And, you know, it has some really good chiptune music on it too. So, yeah.
No, wait, but before we switch, because I know Jill's about to do the so far. I got to ask one question and one interlude thing. All right. So
I'll do my best.
So you'll be fine here. Trust me. So so you said at the beginning of the game, it lets you choose a deck. Like, it doesn't make you choose the cart that you want to claim to be playing under, like the SNK or the Capcom cart.
Well, it says SNK or Capcom. So I imagine that is what you are picking.
So you're picking, like, probably picking the game there. Okay. Because I know there were some exclusive cards and opponents between the two games. Because, like, I played it back on the original Pocket. And one thing I wanted to add, well, two things I wanted to add. One, this was actually my very first video game card game that I ever played.
Oh.
And I definitely feel like it does have some complexities that, you know, card games would have. But compared to the grand scheme of, like, the Yu-Gi-Ohs, the Pokemons, and whatever else is out there in Magic, even.
Yeah, that's the one.
Oh, my God, Magic
game, that Magic game.
We're coming back to you.
I think this is a really good entry point to card games, like video card games. If usually your goal way is like, they're too complicated, I just don't want to deal with all the rules. This game is literally lay some guys down and jump the characters on the other side, just gang up on them. That's the game. And then the last thing I wanted to add was, for those who are like fans of classic SNK and Capcom, aside from just the characters, some of the levels you go to do battling and all are themed in a way around like classic franchises. Like, I recall, because I had the Capcom cart, and there's a level in the game that's kind of meant to become like a parody of the Spencer Mansion from Resident Evil 1. And there's some pretty cool things that exist there. I was like, oh, wow, this is awesome to see. Even back then, I was like, this is nice. And I waited, they still hold up. So just those things, but I just wanted to add those tidbits and ask my question to you.
Well, hopefully
that is a good point. It does. Nice try, Joe. It does lack, you know, it's just basically monster cards and spell cards. Like, you don't have to worry about different mana types or whatever. All the synergy is between like the fighter cards that you're picking. So it is more straightforward in that sense than a lot of card games that I've mucked around with.
I like how you shushed me. You didn't even know what I was going to say. to answer one of Purnell's questions, it says on the store page, you may switch between the SNK Card Fighters version and Capcom Card Fighters version at any time, but each has their own save data. You can also switch between the Japanese and English versions, but each has their own save data. You cannot trade between the Japanese and English versions.
Oh, but you can trade between the English versions.
Yes.
It's like you can have like your Capcom file, your SNK file, and trade between them.
Yes, you can trade between the versions. What's more, you can even use their individual save data to have them battle each other.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome.
Good work. So, I did on this.
There you go. Well, $8 on this one. What do you think?
$8? That's so cheap. Yeah. You have to buy it. Like, hey, come on now. Please.
Cool. Well, I think you sold Purnell on it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, any opportunity to play these Neo Geo Pocket games, like, legitimately, yes, I know emulators exist. I'm a fucking idiot. I think it is a good opportunity to take.
Cool.
Wow, Eurogamer gave it a 10% back in the day.
Wow, really?
10% out of 100?
It has a Metacritic score of 48. This seems like really, IGN gave it a 30. Man.
One thing I will say, and it's just kind of bullshit, but I got to acknowledge the era, was that when the Neo Geo Pocket Color came out in the States, it came out at a really bad time. Like, the Game Boy Advance was already on the wind, and it was just a matter of waiting. It was almost like how the Dreamcast took on the PS2. Like, people knew the Advance was coming, and the Neo Geo Pocket Color was essentially just a little better than the WonderSwan. Like, it was better than the Game Boy Color in a lot of ways, but it had nothing everyone knew was coming. So,
yeah. Well, just like no one was interested in, like, Game Boy Color games at that time. I mean, I was, but like,
didn't GameStop sell the Neo Geo Pockets with like six games pre-bundled with it just to try and move them?
At one point, but not mine. When I originally bought it, they came with nothing. Like, I originally bought it and I bought Biomotor Unitron with it, and then eventually bought Puyo Pop, and then bought like a few more games. But those were the two I got, and originally it came with nothing. They sold for like $200.
Good choices, though.
It was discontinued in North America after less than a year.
It didn't last long at all. It literally was just people were like, we're not buying it. Why bother when the Game Boy Advance is coming? And I was like, no, it's fun. But I did acknowledge at the time that if the Neo Geo Pocket had come out, I'll even say, actually, I was wrong about the price. I just grabbed my box off the shelf. It sold for
$69.99. Nice.
At the store. So and my price tag says $12.10.99 is when I bought it. But so if it came out a year or two earlier in the States, I think it would have done great.
Yeah.
Tangents.
Well, that's it for you, Tim.
That's it for me. Yep. Time to go nap. Tim. Oh, they need to put out that Ogre Battle game.
Which one?
And translate it.
I didn't know there was a poker game.
Ogre Battle.
Oh.
Wait, was there actually one on the Neo Geo Pocket?
Yes. Yeah, it never came out in the States.
I didn't know that. I thought you said poker.
No. Why don't an Ogre Battle game.
Poker from Ogre Battle.
Poker battle. I thought he said poker battle game.
There's an ogre battle game that never came out.
I didn't know there was an ogre battle game either. So there.
Yep.
I like how it sounds like Tim's muttering like on his way to bed, just away from the microphone.
It's 10.
There's an ogre
he's,
battle.
He's halfway up the steps. I know.
Yeah. So much snow. He's got his nightcap on already.
No, I heard it. Neo Geo Pocket game before. Wait,
I'm going nap. Night, night.
All right. Night. Moving on. Next game to talk about is Demoniaca Everlasting Night, developed by Aki and East Asia Soft, published by East Asia Soft, released January 11th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $14.99. Gothic Metroidvania adventure awaits in Demoniaca Everlasting Night, a side-scrolling action platformer that mixes beautifully grotesque imagery with seductive style. Explore, fight, meet new friends, and seek revenge against those who brought you unbearable pain and loss. Pernell, what is Demoniaca Everlasting Night?
First of all, Aki worked on this.
I originally wanted her to review it, but I figured you would appreciate it more.
I appreciate that because I do appreciate games. I kid because I love. So Demoniaca, and that's how you pronounce it. I was always like, I've kept mispronouncing it, honestly.
Oh, I don't know how the fuck you pronounce it. I'm just taking a stab at it.
I'm taking your cue then. Demoniaca is a game where you play as a character whose name I don't remember, who was killed in a raid on her village by, a demon army. But in the process of it, blood from one of the other fallen demons kind of coalesced in her body, in her corpse, and she was reanimated as a brawler, a demon brawler. I just made that up, but that's pretty much what she is. And she decides to seek revenge by going to their headquarters to beat the snot out of the demons that killed her family and destroyed her home. What is her power? Well, demon power. They're pretty much like it's classic Metroidvania style in the sense that you're in a large castle type environment. In this case, it's called the Tower of Babel that they're building to reach, the pinnacle. And you're exploring this environment. Now, as you're running around, enemies will show up that you have to fight. But unlike a lot of other games of this style, you're not equipping weapons and stuff with their respective stats. What you have is a punch and kick combo system. You have a light punch and a heavy punch, a light kick and a heavy kick. And you use those attacks in various ways to do different things. Like early on in the game, even as you're running through like the entrance hallway, they have like silhouettes that kind of give you some guidance like the early game combos, like press light punch, then heavy punch to do a three punch combo. You can hit enemies that way. And you have, you know, your various stats like attack and defense and demon power and intelligence and luck that you know, affect all that stuff.
Like, so, they have a full-on move list in this game of moves, advanced moves, and demonic moves that's straight out of a fucking fighting game.
It really is. And early on, you don't get access to a bunch of those. Like, you have to unlock them as you go, but they are there. And as you progress through the game, you'll gain more ability to do things. Now, the demonic powers that you mentioned, Joe, they are associated with a sort of, I guess, like attack or magic meter, but it's demon power meter. And that meter, when you have enough charges, you can do specific attacks that utilize demon power to do more damage. And that damage is affected by the demon power stat. So you'll be killing enemies to get demon power back. You'll find items sometimes that will give you demon power. Unfortunately, you also find items that will take away demon power and health because they had to throw some douchebag items in the game. Because why not? You're in a demon castle, so of course they would. But you'll basically be balancing that out, like beating dudes up, getting soul points and stuff. Soul points, what do? Well, soul points are a double standard. They are currency in the game, which you can use to come across various shops to buy either health items, magic items, or equipment, or sometimes new moves. Also, if you get enough souls in succession, you can charge a meter. This meter, after you hit certain levels, you'll get stat bumps, like 25% increase to your attack and defense and stuff like that. And when you max it out, if you can max it out, because good fucking luck, max it out, you'll get like a supercharge where you're kind of like running around like beating the snot out of things and the music plays and it comes like a really heavy rock theme, which is funny because the OST is already rock. But this goes to more like a metal-ish theme and the main, like there's like a sub-character in the lower right corner starts playing guitar in the corner sometimes and it really goes in and hams it up for that, which was kind of interesting. So, and as this is happening, you're pretty much running around going to town. There's a few things to point out here I should mention because oddly enough, I've kind of already referenced the main quirks of the general ideas of the game, as in running around a castle, getting treasure chests with items or in currency and stuff, and occasionally coming across bosses that upon defeat will give you a new move that you can use to traverse the castle better. Also, I should mention this, then I'll get to the other stuff. There are also special monsters that will show up in the castle sometimes. Like, they're in specific places, mind you. They don't just randomly appear. But they are monsters that you are not really meant to fight initially when you meet them. They're really strong, and you can come back and fight them later when you feel confident or strong enough to fight them, and they give you cool drops if you beat them. And then I guess, like, that thing there. So, my actual odd points to make about the game, though. If you're going to play this game, I do feel like you need to give it time. Like, this is one of those games where I won't say it gets good after the first 2 hours or some shit. Not that crazy, but it does take some getting used to because that combo system is a little clunky. Like, it's not as smooth as I would like it to be. And even though there's a guard button, it takes a little bit to get used to knowing how and when to even try to guard. Because, again, it's not like smooth transition. It's like, guard, guard, like, you're not really just going to be pulling at all. It has a fighting game moveless, but it doesn't have that fighting game smoothness. There were a number of times where I was just kind of tanking hits. Another thing about it is that the enemy placement can get a little bit annoying sometimes. Like, there are enemies that will be like blocking jump chasms to your save room because you can't save anywhere. There's a specific save room that you have to find in each area.
And like sometimes that's where you get your school days.
Yeah. But normally the old school way, a lot of times those save rooms will be like, hey, it's a fairly accessible place. You know, you found it. Now you can kind of just like get the lay of the land. I remember like the second or third save room I came across in an area, it was blocked by like these two floating eyes that required like a perfect jump to get between in order to get over it because I couldn't kill them because they were floating. And your character is a brawler. I didn't have any, you know, distance attacks to use. So in that regard, I got my ass handed to him and I almost died trying to get to the save room. Just trying to jump into the damn save room. Drove me nuts. But then somehow I managed to beat the first boss on my first try, despite getting, I got killed more fighting the mobs than the first boss. Now, also there's another thing I got to mention too, but this is on me, not the game so much, because I got a feeling it's doable, I just couldn't figure it out. So, early on in the game, you come across, there's a guy named Boxman who shows up on a cave and he gives you tips. Sometimes he gives you new moves, and other times, you know, he just helps you out for the most part, for mysterious reasons. but one of the things he does is he gives you access to a summon spell. You summon a little guy called Devil Boy. And Devil Boy is supposed to be a two-player co-op character, where once you summon him, a second player can control him and fight with you. I guess he eventually goes away over time, or if he takes damage. Now, if you don't have a friend to play with you, he's supposed to be able to be controlled by AI, but I couldn't find how to switch him to AI. So I was running, and I looked at screenshots that clearly showed him as AI on Steam. So I was like, well, I know it's doable, but I can't figure out how to switch him to it. So
I thought it was just default that way. Like, when I summoned it, it just started attacking enemies.
See, that's the thing. I think mine defaulted to two-player, which I don't understand why. Because, like, I didn't push anything to change it. It just, he came out and just kind of hung over my head, like, okay, do something, you bitch. And he didn't. So he probably would have helped me get across that chasm I was talking about, because he could have flown out there and blown breath at him or something. But nope. Mine just kind of hung around and did a whole bunch of nothing.
That's weird.
So that was like my only gripe there. But I'm a wager that there probably is a button to switch between them or something. Or maybe even my Switch, my Xbox was like running on like, hey, there's a second controller tugged in, but you don't know. Which, if there is, I need to find the guy skulking outside my house and beat his ass, because I don't have another controller in my house with batteries in it. So I don't know how I can register a second controller. But it was just like on two-player. But at the end of the day, I feel like with this game, it's not an easy like sell in a sense of like buy it, because again, the movement has some clunkiness to it, especially when you start having to deal with the precise wall jumping type stuff. And due to the fact that you're primarily a brawler and the enemies don't really have a whole lot of like blocking going on for them, or not blocking, but they're better with moving than you are as far as timing goes. Also, there are a lot of small ass enemies that are really hard to hit, one of which turns you to stone, which makes it easy for him to juggle your ass. He wasn't easy for me to fight until I got my first attempt at him to jump in the air and then dive down and punch, which made short enemies much easier to deal with. But I digress, because one thing to mention that might make that better for other players coming in is there is an easy mode. You can choose an easier difficulty, which might make that stuff more, you know, easier to handle. I didn't. You know why people listen to this damn show. So that's worth pointing out. But for me, that made it a pretty bit rough time, because like the combat wasn't like the Symphony and I stuff. We're just kind of like feeling like a powerful badass the entire time, because even though you are a cool brawler with rock music playing you through the castle, you can get wrecked very easily by enemies in this game. So player beware. So honestly, though, I had fun with the game despite my issues that I mentioned in the review for it. So I definitely would give it at least a, well, you do your thing.
Well, $15. What's your verdict?
I think it's a good try it title. It won't win everybody over, but I think what I mentioned in this review should give people enough information to know if they are one of the people that won't be won over. Otherwise, come on in.
And if there's anything else you need to know, boobs.
I guess there was only at the beginning when she's in the chair and in those occasional scenes.
Look at her sprite, man. Her sprite is just titties.
Well, but she's got a cool coat. Biker coat.
There you go. All right, next game to talk about is Mushroom Wars 2, developed and published by Zillion Whales, released January 13th on Xbox One and PS4 for $19.99. Sequel to one of the hit RTS games of the last generation, Mushroom Wars 2 builds upon its predecessor by introducing hero characters, reimagined single-player campaigns, even wilder co-op and competitive multiplayer, as well as a visual overhaul, all while preserving the core gameplay mechanics that made the original Mushroom Wars so enjoyable. Chris, tell us about your time with Mushroom Wars 2.
Okay, so this game, when I loaded it up, I was actually like, wait a minute, I have played this before. So it was like the opposite of the RP Golf experience kind of thing, because I actually did review this one on Switch some time ago. But I thought this was a sequel to that, because it's been a while. So I was like,
no, this is just the Xbox and PlayStation port of it.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is that totally streamlined my review, but it did not stop me from playing it last night until my hands hurt. Because, you know, eagle-eared viewers will know that that I quite praised this game last time, and I'm going to do it again. So Mushroom Wars 2 is a game where, you know, you're just a bunch of fun guys. I had to get that out of the way right away.
Fucking
and yeah. And basically, you're something happens involving a mosquito in the first like quest, or I guess the first like campaign mode kind of thing, and you have to march against the green guys. You're the orange guys, they're the green guys. You're all fun guys, but you know, it's you against them. Secondary color wars. So basically you go from stage to stage, and each one has a different setup, where you have your base and they have, like, you know, it's set up in different ways depending on the level. And the idea is that you are to overwhelm the enemy's numbers and take over all of their places. And as you get further in the game, there's different types of goals, but you know, the initial goal is just conquer everybody. The way you do this, it's an RTS game, a real-time strategy game. However, it's not as concerned with things like resource gathering or anything like that. Basically, as soon as a building is yours, you know, there's yours, there's theirs, there's neutral. And if it's your building, then the population of it is just going to go up. And the idea is to just click on, or you know, move the cursor over to the house, which is nice because it has kind of this auto lock that can be annoying if you're going too fast, but at least it doesn't make you sail all the way to the other side of the map accidentally, you know? Like, it'll kind of pull itself to the next stop. And holding down the right shoulder button, you then push like one of the face buttons to send a certain percentage of your soldiers wherever they're going to go. You can either fortify other buildings, or you can send them after the enemy, 25, 50, 75, or 100% at a time. And of course, this diminishes the numbers of the building that they were just in, leaving you more open to being attacked. So it's all about just kind of spreading those spores around and you know, taking over. And it is so easy to like learn. Like, you learn it, they have tutorial levels peppered through, like, to show different things. Like, if you hold the left button, you can change a building type, but at the expense of some of the soldiers that are in it at the moment, because you can build towers, you can build smitheries, which just raises your attack so that it takes less of your soldiers to take over someone else. And yeah, so you can do like all this kind of this cool stuff, and it's just all right there, like, you know, holding down one button and pushing another, like, that's all you got to do. Therefore, you know, and the difficulty scales up quite satisfactorily. Like, you know, you'll be like really, you know, by level 19, 20, and by the time basically you reach your first like real boss, because there are boss matches as well. Although they're done a little bit differently even than RTSs. It's more like you still have to conquer the enemy, but in the presence of, let's say, the first boss is a giant frog, which every time you pass by this frog, it just like, you know, eats up a bunch of your little soldiers. So you kind of have to plan on losing a bunch of soldiers every time you want to cross the line, which is pretty clever. But yeah, clever is the key word, because like the layout of these matches is just amazing. It's always single screen. And I don't know, they every time it feels like perfectly balanced. It's frantic. Like, it's actually pretty difficult at some places. There's actually one tutorial I can't beat, and it's a tutorial.
Wow.
Yeah, and it gets more complex as you go along. Like I said, eventually you're teaming up with a different army and taking down aliens, because there's aliens in here. Why not?
Yeah, why not?
alien necromancers, actually, funny enough. And then, you know, you eventually unlock other heroes, and those heroes will have different skills, and then you learn how to use skills, which are just, you know, a push of the directional button, you know, at a certain time, you know, it has timing based on them. And yeah, you're just going to play this campaign like until your ears fall off. And then it has a campaign, like a versus mode, where you can play two people, three people, or four people, including online.
Yay!
So yeah, there's a four-person match would just give me a heart attack, so I'm never going to do it.
Do it online. Fuck it, try it.
Maybe. I don't know. I still got it on Switch, so I can do it that way too. Although I'm not as far in the Switch version as the PS4 version, because I just kept going.
Nice.
Yeah, really, there's no notable difference between the Switch version and the PS4 version. Everything looks to be in order. It looks like it's basically the same game. You know, it's a little bit bigger and brighter because of the, you know, PS4 being a, you know, more of a powerhouse. But apart from that, yeah, it's the same game, and I still love it.
Well, $20. What's your verdict?
Yeah, go and get it. I mean, I'm going to more say get it on Switch because it lends itself really well to being portable. But I mean, this PS4 version is just as worthy of your $20. So
cool. There you go. All right. Next game is Super Sammy Roll, developed by Sanzai Games, published by X Plus Company Limited, released January 9th on Xbox One, Series X and S for $14.99. The wicked Albert the Seventh has captured Sammy's friend Vera, and only you can help him save her. Embark on a journey rolling through beautiful green fields, deserts dotted with magnificent pyramids, dangerous oozing volcanoes, frigid icelands, and many other memorable places with rolling physics and tons of hidden secrets. Pernell, tell us about your time with Super Sammy Roll.
Super Sammy Roll gets my honorable award for Surprise Game of the Week because, holy shit, this game is great. and you were like, you want to review Super Sammy Roll? I'm like, okay, sure. I actually wanted it originally because the OST on the trailer was a banger. And I was like, I'll take it for that alone. And turns out the composer for the OST is a recent favorite of mine, Evader, who I guess he's new to the scene, but I came across him initially for the first time after last year's Smelter. So he's officially on my list of, like, if he composes for it, I'm probably going to buy it. Like, he's up there with Dominic Ninmark right now. But enough about the awesome music. What the hell is the game? So
yeah, what the hell is the game?
It's a really simple game, honestly. Simple doesn't mean easy, but simple in concept. The idea is that every level involves you starting at a point as your little boy Sammy, and he needs to get to the end of the level, which is marked by his friend, an owl, who will fly him to the next zone. Traversal on the environments involves moving the control stick, which in turn makes Sammy roll, because Sammy doesn't walk. Sammy rolls, baby. And he basically has a sort of Sonic Spin Dash-esque momentum system going for him. Like, when he's moving, he's flying. But at the same time, he does take time to pick up a pace. So it's not like there's no Spin Dash function where you can just stop and, like, burst out. So the game takes advantage of the idea that it's momentum-based, you know, rolling physics, too, by utilizing hills and jumping points where you have to, like, kind of time your jumps to get around. Now, if it was only those mechanics to explore the map, I feel like even with this game, it would still be fun. But they do a little bit more to give you some diversity in the movement. So in addition to, like, just running around by way of rolling or moving around by rolling in the basic jump, there is a sort of ground pound, which when you do it, not only does it smack the ground to activate switches and occasionally, you know, damage floors if you need to, but you also get, like, a sort of a springy step so you can, like, kind of bounce a bit higher off the ground after doing it. So you can use that to kind of reach higher levels than you would have if you just did your normal jump. And it also kind of works as a sort of stopping thing where, like, if you need to, like, get yourself on the ground, maybe if you're sucking at timing the jump from point A to point B, like, I need to stop right here. You can ground slam to just get to the ground, which is good. You'll utilize that, trust me. Though you can exploit it because it does have a cooldown. So, like remember, like, in Sonic 3 where you got the bubble shoot, you just, like, boom, 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 because, like, you got to mash the button and just bounce indefinitely. You can't do that with this. Like, when you bounce, there's a cooldown. So you can't just willy-nilly bounce all over the place. You got to bounce, go up in the air. You're up in the, you can bounce again before you hit the ground, but it takes time, so bounce wisely. There's also a tongue ability. He has a tongue, like a chameleon or whatever. And when he extends his tongue, if it touches a surface, it will pull him towards it, sort of like a grappling hook. And the game does a good job of making you utilize that. Sometimes you have to use your tongue to extend it underneath a gate, for example. Pull yourself under the gate and then grab and pull yourself onto the ledge that's on the other side. Other times, you may need to jump in the air, and while you're in the air, extend your tongue to grab like a swinging bar to kind of swing around and then jump off of it to propel yourself to the next ledge or next swinging bar, which you'll then have to also tongue. So there's a lot of, like, you know, mechanics going on there. But then lastly, and really challengingly, I might add, is there's an added feature where you also, like, extend your tongue out to an object, and then while you're moving towards it, you can press the jump button to kind of sort of do, like, a momentum-based jump over whatever you're going towards. And sometimes the timing for that can get brutal. So, like, the easy example would be, like, you're on a ledge, and across from you there's a fence extending from the ground with spikes on the top, and there's a fence extending from the ceiling with spikes on the bottom. which means there's a very narrow window that you have to jump through to progress. And you can't normal jump your way through it. You will hit the spikes if you try that, and you will fail. So you have to use your tongue to get the momentum going where it's pulling you towards it. And then when you hit the jump button, he's using the momentum. He's going to hopping over and through the crevice. And there's an interesting bit of timing that comes out of it. And I'm still trying to get a little better at timing it just right on perfect runs because I failed a lot. I failed a whole lot. But it has not daunted me because I've had a great time playing this game. The levels have a fair bit of variety to them. Like 1 minute you're on a sky kingdom, another minute you're on the desert, and next you're on a highway. Just a sky highway, of course, because everything's over hovering over an abyss because Sam Lee is in a really messed up world where nothing's attached to the ground. I don't know how he survived this long, but hey, whatever. He's got a tongue. He rolls with it. So in addition to like the normal exploration of the levels, there are also secrets, in the form of like secret levels involved, you know, like sort of like how Mario World was, where there's occasionally secret exits on the world. If you can find it, you'll unlock a different path on the world map to go to a new world. And when you go to the new world, that stage has, instead of, well, crap, I'm a little ahead of myself here. Normal levels, there's a raspberry item that you can acquire. It's like hidden on every level. And I'll tell you what that does in a second. But on the unlockable secret levels, instead of finding a raspberry, you can find a key. I have no idea what the keys do yet, but I look forward to finding out because those secret levels are really freaking hard. There's a level I did where the clock – this isn't even a secret one. The secret one is harder than this. But the normal level, the clock starts at 10 seconds and is ticking down. There are coin items on the levels, every level, mind you, that in addition to being currency for the shop on the map, it also gives you 1 second on your clock. So you need to pretty much move and constantly collect coins to get through the level. Now, here's the rub. The entire stage is pretty much narrow one-frame pathways that curl and turn. So they don't give you time to really, like, finesse your way up the ledge. You're like, you got to go. You got to get the momentum right and make the curves because the clock don't give a shit. And I did beat that level because thankfully it wasn't like monkey ball brutal, but it was still a challenge. Now, I, a masochist, put it on the advanced difficulty, which implies no checkpoints. You have to beat every level in one run, or you do it all from the start. But there is
what a was mode. That about monkey ball?
There it is. And honestly, that's what makes this game really challenging for me because I have no checkpoints. But there is a difficulty where you do get checkpoints in the levels. I don't know what the frequency of them is because, again, I didn't use it. But I also didn't get the impression that it affects the game. Like, you don't lose access to things, I believe, by having that mode. So the advanced mode is solely for, are you a masochist? Then do this. And at the end of every world also, there's like a boss level where there's like a tower where lava's chasing you. And you have to like run around the tower and go through like pipes and stuff to pretty much get to the top before the lava catches you. It's challenging, big shock, right? And at the top, you have to fight the boss, which is Albert the Seventh. And he attacks you in various ways. You beat crap out of him by stomping him. And he runs away to live to fight another day. And you chase him to the next world. All in all, this game is great. And the unlockable. Oh, shit, I didn't mention the unlockables. So remember the coins I mentioned that give you 1 second on your clock?
Yeah.
They also work as a currency. Same for the raspberries that I mentioned earlier as well. And when you find the world shop, the shop that's on each world, you can buy accessories and color schemas for Sammy so you can customize his look. You can purchase hints on where the secrets are in the world. And some of those, actually, all those hints are bullshit. I'm surprised I figured out what some of that stuff was. But spoiler for those who really want to cheat themselves, if you look at the trailer for the game, you can see the maps with all the exits unlocked. So they don't tell you how to find the exits, but they do tell you what levels have second exits. So just that's there for you if you want to just let that go and not deal with the secret guy because he's a jerk. But you can also buy other modes to play in the game too. Like there's like a multiplayer mode you can buy. And I didn't even bother with the other ones yet because I'm still trying to get S plus ranks on all the damn levels. But you can buy additional modes.
You are a masochist.
I really am a masochist. You get, once I learned there was an S plus ranking on the stages, I was kind of stuck. So no checkpoints and S plus stage rankings. And some of them are hard to get. Hell, my kid, most of them are hard to get. I'm not even going to mince words there. So, but all in all, this game came out of nowhere, and I love it. I genuinely love it.
Sweet. It's, well, it's $15. What do you think?
Buy the fuck out of it. It's really good.
Buy the fuck out of it. I want that to be in the trailer.
Yeah.
Next trailer I see for the game, it just says, buy the fuck out of it. Pernell Vaughn, the SNL podcast.
You can even censor it, guys, in order to make it, you know, digestible to the masses. But
Doc Havoc was asking, so much tonguing, is this a family-friendly game? And can you further elaborate on the subtle nuances of these tonguing mechanics?
Somebody never played a Yoshi game.
Whoa.
Ripper.
Oh, jeez. All right, well, we got one final game to talk about tonight. That is called Unlock the Cat, developed by Mini Cactus Games, published by Cubite Interactive, released January 13th on the Switch for $3.99. Kitty is unable to reach her destination due to some rocks in her path. He could jump over the rocks, but he doesn't want to do that, as he claims to be very tiring. So it's up to you to carry out the heavy labor for the comfort of this little kitten. Brooke, tell us about Unlock the Cat.
Before I do, I just want to call out that the cat changes genders like halfway through that description.
I know, and it's beautiful.
I respect that. Yeah, I loved it. So, Unlock the Cat. You know, I call these slidey puzzle games. I've been calling them that ever since the other day when I hit Chris up and I was like, dude, what even is this game? I can only move everything around like along the X or Y axis. He was like, yo, this is just one of those sliding puzzle games. And the thing you're describing where you can only mysteriously move objects along one axis. Yeah, that's called sliding. So, you know, I said I'd never played one of these before. He linked me to a couple and I realized, hey, I've totally played a slidey puzzle game before. It's been since I was holding one made out of plastic in elementary school. So I didn't recognize what it was at first. So what separates this puzzle game from other slidey puzzle games, as I call them, that's a technical term. You got a cat on the board that you're trying to free by clearing its path to the exit. You do this by sliding around obstacles to clear a path to the exit for the cat until they can get through. The cat itself can also be slid around to help solve the puzzle if it itself is in the way, as cats so often are, especially when you're doing something that's for them. Longtime cat owners will find it extra relatable that in specific puzzles, when the cat wants to be let out, but it itself is the thing holding you back from even doing that for it.
So true.
They'll find that extra relatable. Oh, the cat wants to be let out, but it's in the way and you can't even do what it wants you to do until it moves. Classic cat shit. Yeah, for what it is, really nice little game, a reasonably nice and comfortable interface. It's very pretty for, what did you say, $3.99?
Yep.
For $3.99, I would say this is a really pretty game. This would make a great phone app. It actually gets surprisingly challenging. I'm currently stuck on level 14. I'm glad I got to level 14, though, because I got to experience that nighttime can occur in the game after a while. Level 14 is the first level where it's nighttime. We've got a different background, different color scheme going on. That's always a nice touch. Nice soundtrack, albeit it's mostly just one song. It's a good song. Got just what you need to have a nice ambient chill time for some puzzle goodness. Chris, I believe, was deeply moved by this soundtrack, I think.
Moved to tears. Like, why am I crying at a puzzle game?
This one hit me hard, man. The ambient puzzle noise, I can see that. Like, I was moved a little too. And taking it back to the soundtrack / sound design space, if you walk away from the game, the cat will meow at you every couple minutes. That's always nice, too. As a player, if you want me to care a little bit more about the game, pop a whiny cat in there that I have to pay attention to. I always appreciate one of those. So that's my review in a nutshell.
Chris, what are your thoughts?
Oh, I love me a slidey puzzle game. In fact, when I demonstrated, or when I was explaining to Brooke, like, oh, this is just like one of these, and I like linked an online, like, just a puzzle game that you can play, like the classic, like 1 through 15 on a 4x4 grid.
Yeah.
You know, where you got to slide them around. I was sitting there at my lunch break, and I was like, do 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 do. Oh, I beat it. Here you go.
And I'm over here like, oh, that's what it is. I'm over here trying to talk to Chris on Discord, being like, what do I call it when I can move something laterally but not the other way? What is this game? So everything I said before is true.
It's actually laterally and longitudinally. Yeah. That's a real word.
Longitudinally. Okay, I'm gonna chant that a few times after the show.
Longitudinally.
I might have
longitudinally.
We're going with that.
Yeah, longitudinally. Yeah.
Because through board gaming, I learned the word orthogonal, and I stuck with that. But now I just learned those two.
Orthogonal.
So, yeah, I got into slidey puzzles because they keep putting them in RPGs at varying levels of urgency. Like, it's hidden in the original Final Fantasy, and that's one of the earliest ones. Yeah, the original Final Fantasy. You get on the boat. I think you hold down a button and push B and A, alternate them 55 times, and you can play a 15 block slidey puzzle.
I did not know that shit.
Yeah, it's a great little Easter egg. So starting there, they put one, they force you to do one, which is, I think, a little unfair in a game called Beyond the Beyond that, most people don't know it, but I know Purnell does. they force you to do one in there. This exact kind of puzzle game, however, with the different size pieces, is probably the hardest puzzle in Lufia 2, which took me forever twice to finally get through that one. And so by the time the Super Nintendo days had ended, I was kind of I'm actually pretty good at these, I guess. And then I played Wind Waker, and then there's a whole set of 20 of them in there where you're putting together pictures and stuff. And so I just eventually got to really liking these kind of games. And so anyway, this is all just to say that everything Brooke said is correct, and this game is really good. I got to level 31, though, and yeah, ooh. I can attest that I almost completely gave up on it twice on the road to 31, and it's out of a total of 40 levels, so your $4 is going to get you a lot of rock moving and kitten corralling.
Yeah, if you're into this, this is a few hours of entertainment at least, especially if you're not good at sliding like me, and in the time it takes Chris to complete 31 levels, you complete 14. That's it.
Well, it's $4. It's actually on sale for $3, so verdicts?
Dude, if you like, as I call them, slidey puzzle games, this is going to be $3.
I think it's going to take off.
I was telling Chris earlier on Discord, when a game like this has as nice of a soundtrack and interface as this one does, and it's an instant try it or buy it for me. That stuff's not cheap. It's not free to just make that shit. If this is your go ahead.
It sounds like you got your first fuck it, why not?
Yeah. No, my very first fuck it, why not? That's a really good way to put this. This is a milestone for me. Yeah, if your sort of puzzle game is the slidey subgenre, you'll like this.
So officially, it's a fuck it, why not?
You gotta say it. It's a fuck it, why not? Yo, if we can say number one Sudokus is worth the money because they give us the type of puzzle we crave with a great soundtrack and a pretty nice interface, hey, this is a fuck it, why not, too. Damn. They earned it. Give it to them.
Works for me.
I'm upgrading mine to a buy it. Just because I like this kind of game, and I like the twist that they put on it, and I like that you can move the thing around with your finger. Instead of using the any controllers, it's totally touch based, and that's really helpful for me.
Nice.
With this kind of game, because it's a tactile game in real life, so it's kind of cool that it's that way in this video game.
Cool.
Well, I guess I'm buying this.
Fuck it, why not?
And the cat is really cute. It rolls over sometimes just to
Especially when you're trying to move it somewhere else. It's like, oh, I'm going to roll over now. No big deal.
Yeah. And I swear to God, sometimes when you're starting to really mess up in the harder levels, that's when it starts meowing at you more. Awesome. But I still don't know if that's exactly correct. I want to hear from the devs on that one.
Well, we'll find out if they listen. Yeah. But yeah, that's it for this episode. Made it through. Thanks to all of y'all for being here and hanging out and chatting about MAGFest and Xbox buying everybody.
It bought, that's like a Simpsons reference. What happened to that company? They bought everybody.
They didn't even make a monorail. Come on.
Monorail. Well, that's how they're going to get between the companies that they bought. They're going to move them all in. They only have so much space.
No, we had a question. Where does Unlock the Cat rank in the list of cat games on the Switch? Root Beer needs to know.
I haven't revised that list for 2022. I mean, I guess it's number one for 2022 because that's all I've played so far. But, I mean, yeah, there you go. It's numero uno, both in ranking and in volume.
You know, I already answered in chat, but I will say just out loud, that's really tough because there's so many cat games for Switch. But in the context that Chris puts it into, I can see that. This is our first one in 2022. May as well be on top.
Nice. All right. Well, yeah, that's it for this episode. Anyone have any final words to end it?
I guess the one I can come across, I was looking at the eShop and someone put out a freaking a sit-up game.
Oh, come on.
A sit-up trainer. Sit-ups workout. Like, how does that even work? Like, is it literally a digital version of that thing you get on, like, Wikipedia, like, good sit-up routine?
Oh, my God. The only way they can make that worth it for me is if it's DJ Khaled's voice saying another one after I do one sit-up.
Another
one. I wanted to say that I was on mute when Purnell was giving his last review, but when he said, Sammy doesn't walk, Sammy rolls, baby, I laughed so hard. I wish I hadn't been on mute. It was so good.
He's super Sammy rules. So oh, good. Man. But like, and we need to do the SNL sit-up workout, then we can just motivate people like, what the hell are you doing? Get the fuck up! One more push-up! One more sit-up! Get up!
Sit up more, lard ass.
Sit up harder.
Oh, man. SML, sit up more. Yeah.
Get your sit ups on.